This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson.
And joining me, Darius Thomas.
And if you don't have vision, you just have a bunch of, I want to do it this way, I want, no. Like, we're all in the same.
Caleb Pettis is here with some wise words of wisdom. As someone who started out drawing on shoes, she has worked her way into a leadership role with FC Cincinnati. We talk about building a team, advocating for creative, and how to establish a culture of growth. Cool. I'm good to go. What do you want? What time do you want to clap?
25. That was soft. Very, very soft. But
yeah,
it works.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
All right, today we're joined by Kayla Pettis, otherwise known as KP. She is the Senior Director of Brand and Content at FC Cincinnati and is also a co-founder of Locker Room. So, Kayla, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Can we start by just hearing a little bit about your background? And oh, by the way, I should have said this earlier. You and I were at Illinois at the same time, so really small world.
Super small world.
Can you give us a little background into how you came up in this industry and what made you want to get into the sports side of content and branding?
No, for sure. So I was actually an athlete. I played baseball. I was actually the first female to play Little League baseball in Chicago for Jackie Robinson West. So I was always like the only girl on the team, right? I always wanted to play. They forced me into softball because I couldn't play baseball in high school, which I feel like should change. But played softball, had a few scholarships, but I also played basketball. So long story short, I had a bum knee, ACL tear, ruined my career, and I also majored in industrial design. So once I figured my hoop dreams and softball dreams were like down the drain, I kind of focused fully on my career and just kind of worked to get my degree. Ended up getting a minor in Mandarin Chinese. I thought I was going to go work in China and design for like Apple or, I don't know, Ford or something like that. But ended up getting a job in the point of purchase industry straight out of college. Worked that for a good, I want to say a solid year, and realized I wasn't happy. Someone I was dating at the time was still playing ball. I was having like a little bit of FOMO. All my friends were still hooping and, you know, engaging in sports. So I found myself at night going home and doing like graphics for them, shooting videos for them, hype reels and things like that. And I realized like it was an actual space for that. And at the time, wasn't really huge on branding athletes and creating packages and logos for them. So I kind of took the opportunity to do so myself and went to work the next day and was just like, I can't do this anymore. I quit. And kind of like, I was like, what is it, Batman? Had a job in the morning, and then at night I was coming home and doing my dirty sports work. And I quit my job on a whim and landed in the sports industry. I applied for a job out at Washington State. So they were the first to like really truly give me a full-time chance out there. So that was kind of my introduction. And then from there, just kind of bounced around. Because I had a goal in mind of truly what I wanted to become. So tried to use each job as a stepping stone to truly get to where I wanted to be. So from Washington State, made it out to Rutgers, then to Atlanta, and now at FC Cincinnati.
That's awesome. So before we get into the fun part of the interview, because you have a lot of interesting things about you, where did your desire and kind of interest in design come from? Not just sports design, but like what went into like majoring into industrial design?
Man, what's crazy is I had no idea what I wanted to be when I first was going to college. In high school, I was that person that you would bring your notebook and I would draw whatever you wanted on your notebook and things like that. So I was always into art specifically. And crazy enough, I was super into math. My mom used to buy me like math books, math puzzle books to keep me quiet as a kid, which was kind of weird. Most people play with toys and Legos and stuff, and I had freaking puzzle books. So I didn't know exactly what I wanted to become and what that career could possibly be. Everyone was like, oh, go into architecture, go into engineering and things like that. So honestly, I took foundation classes. When I got to school, I went in undecided. I was taking architecture classes. I kept falling asleep in the lectures. And the professor was like, if you can't stay awake, this isn't for you. And I'm like, okay, deal, fine. But I still needed to take my gen eds. And I was still taking, I think it was drawing 101, a foundation course. And I was walking through the gallery out at the University of Illinois. And I came across these sketches of like shoes, which I'm a huge sneaker fan. So someone that was designing sneakers. And I was like, oh man, that's dope. Like, what is that? And I saw like it said industrial design. And I truly still didn't understand what that meant. I was like, oh, designing factories or something weird like that. Nah, it's not really for me. But I came to realize that it's so much more than that. It's from the time you wake up, every product is designed. An industrial designer plays a role in that. So I saw it as a way to connect the two things that I was passionate about, with which was math and design. And so that was truly how I got into the space of design. But it truly just came from a place of like, I just like to draw on things. I was drawing on my wall at home, notebooks, anything I can get my hands on, sneakers. Even as a kid, I was like painting on my shoes. And my mom was like, you are nuts. Don't do that. But it's crazy now. That's what I do all the time. So that was kind of really my introduction into wanting to get into that space.
Nice. So you consider yourself a Connect Four legend. Talk about the background of where that comes from and how that may or may not help in your creative process.
Man, I don't start my day off without playing some type of logic game. Connect Four for me is probably my favorite. I'm also the best at it. I don't lose very often. Even at work, I have a leaderboard. And I'm like, I want to say like 97 and maybe 14 and maybe a couple of ties. Like I rarely lose. When I lose, it's literally me beating myself or looking at a bad angle or something. But just truly that competitive nature, right? And just a love for logic and puzzles. So like Sudoku is something I do. I don't even know if I just said that right, but that's one thing I do every morning I wake up. There's an app and it gives you a daily puzzle. Like that's how I start my day, is like problem solving. And it's just something that really just, I don't know, it makes me feel good. I accomplish the day if I don't do my Sudoku puzzle, something is off. And my team knows it. They're like, oh, you want to play Connect Four? You having a bad day? You know, you want to beat us really quick? but it's also becoming an incentive of, you know, overseeing creative requests. If someone needs an urgent request, they know they have to beat me in Connect Four in order to get it. So it's truly become part of my daily routine, but it just keeps you fresh. And it's also a way to loosen up a little bit. Just have a little fun. I'm super competitive. So when I lose, I am like, no, you have to play me again. Like, no, like you thought you won. No, ha ha ha. You won't get past like the third row this time. So it's truly just a way for me to just have a little bit of fun in this industry too. And bring out that competitive element in everyone around me.
Well, what's the play? Do you always start with, or do you typically go the same route, or do you change it up?
What's crazy is I can go anywhere, but I always have to be yellow. That's my favorite color. If I feel like I'm red, I'm going to lose. I don't know. I'm really red unless I play on like iMessage, because they assign you a color, which I think is whack, but I'm usually yellow. That's my play. It doesn't matter where, though. I can go any direction. It's on.
Awesome. Well, we talked about, you know, you going from Illinois and then covering local artists. Who were some of your favorites, and where was the, I know you talked about going to Washington State, but when did you figure out like, hey, I can really, you know, do this as a full-time career?
Oh, man, it was crazy. So, in college, my roommate's boyfriend was actually a pretty well-known producer in Chicago. And just naturally, he was working with a lot of artists. And I remember I had a video camera. So my mom used to shoot video at church. And so we had like a lot of like Canon and all type of like Mark IIs and things sitting around the house. And so for me, I just, again, loving that creative space and doing things, I would play around with it, but I was never really serious. And one day he saw the camera sitting on the table and he's like, do you shoot videos? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, like I didn't, but I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? And he's like, well, I have this artist in Chicago that's super dope. And he has to get a video shot because this kid is going to be the next best thing in rap. And I'm like, yeah, OK, whatever. Everyone says that about their friends that rap. So I literally that next weekend we went up to Chicago and it was actually G Herbo. And it was interesting. I shot his very first video. I remember going out there and these little kids, we weren't in the best neighborhood in Chicago. So my dad and my mom was like, are you crazy? But just from that experience, that's where I really got the tap into the video side of things. Right. and just shooting videos like continuously. I would go home every weekend and keep shooting these videos. And doing that, I was doing like the producing, I was doing the shot list, I was securing permits, I was trying to figure out, plan out, you know, I was actually editing, I was shooting, I was a one person camera woman. So I had to like shoot the same thing four different times. So it just really taught me a lot in that moment. And then from there, again, I was an athlete at the time before I got hurt. But once I did get hurt, that kind of ended my dreams there. And it kind of put me in a weird scholarship situation. So I had an opportunity to work with Illinois football. So I actually got my, that was my first unpaid job, I would say. I was working as a video content producer with Illinois football. And it's just all the things that I had learned shooting music videos. So got to Illinois football. That was the first time I made like a video hype reel for sports, because I was going to practices and showing up and cutting that footage. And this was 2009, I think. So like not a lot of that was really truly happening in the digital social space as much. So I was kind of like dabbling in a few different things. And just naturally having those skills, I think, is truly what helped me to get a jump into the sports industry once I decided to go down that path. Because I was like, okay, as a designer, I'm pretty solid. I've got a video element. That's pretty awesome. But then also the industrial design side of it, I was doing a lot of 3D work. So I was coming out the gate making 3D graphics and videos and crazy stuff. And these people were like, holy cow, that can add to our social presence, or that's a way to captivate this audience or connect between the in-stadium element and then what we're trying to build on that social following space. So that's truly where it started connecting for me. And then, you know, parallel to that, I was doing like logos for my friends that were athletes and things like that. They're like, oh, we need a website, and oh, we need this to match our hype video and market ourselves. So I just constantly saw it start blowing up, and I'm like, this is truly something that could be a lane for me that I never realized was actually there. So the stars aligned, I'll say, in that way for me a little bit.
I was just trying to think of where to go next, because I feel like you outlined something that I think is important for young creatives to understand. It's not like you're waiting for your opportunity, or you were waiting until you had all the necessary skills in order to say yes to an opportunity. You decided, somebody asked you if you could do it, and you bet on yourself and said, I'll figure it out. So that mentality, maybe it's the competitive nature in you, it seems like, but how do you approach something that you don't necessarily know how to do as you're trying to figure it out?
Oh man, I feel like I've been in that situation a lot. Most notably would be back in 2010, web design. I knew how to put, MySpace back then, right? We were all coders and things like that. But I remember I did a sketch. There was an illustration I had of Derrick Rose's son, PJ Rose. And they're good family friends. And I remember sending that sketch over to the family, and they were like, oh my God, this is awesome. And it was from him sitting on his dad's lap, making that little face during the interview. And from that, we had like a clothing line built and everything. And they're like, okay, now we need a website because we want to sell the merch. And I'm like, website? Oh man, like, I don't know much, but I can navigate some templates and stuff like that. So truly like seeing an opportunity and seeing like the growth that I wanted myself, it's like, I don't know how to do it, but maybe this could be a good thing for me to figure out if I'm actually interested in it too. Because I didn't really truly know, like, you don't really tap into those worlds on a daily basis. So you don't really appreciate what goes into it or what you can learn or grow from that world. So web design was something that, you know, it was never on my radar at all. I was like, I can make my template look good and make my page look good, add in some photos, some graphics. But I kind of immersed myself in that environment to learn. And from that, I realized it was not something for me. I can do it, but it's not for me. But just not, I'm always open to learning about other opportunities or different avenues, because it also contributes to what you become after that. Like, now I have that skill in my arsenal. After that moment, I was like, okay, this is easier. I started learning a little bit more and more every time I tried to do it. So if I needed to build a web page now, it's easy for me to hop into that space. Not something that I do on a daily basis, but it's also like a toolkit, like something on my little tool belt that I can keep and be a little bit flexible, which is truly helpful in this industry right now. So just having that willingness to just learn as much as you can, not necessarily going down a career path for that, but it still just adds to your arsenal. It helps.
All right, let's jump into some of the stops. So you briefly talked about Washington State and Rutgers and Atlanta for the Falcons. What's kind of been your experience like at those different levels, working for pros and in the college athletics, and what have you enjoyed most on the journey?
Oh, man. I feel like those are two different worlds, collegiate versus pro. I'd say the biggest difference for me has been structure, and also having a team to support you. I think, too, back then, it was interesting because and still now you're overworked, you're doing a lot of different jobs. So in the collegiate space, you see a lot of people that are like, hey, I run social and I'm the digital content producer and I'm this and I'm that, which is what I was at Rutgers. I was doing a little bit of everything for women's basketball. It was like, hey, I travel with the team. I shoot their content. I make sure it goes on social. I make the graphics. You're like a one-stop shop. Whereas for the pros, you have a little bit more of a specialized approach in how you can be best in your role. I feel like it sets you up for that kind of thinking a little bit more. And there's also a lot of like more stipulations, you know, there's a lot of more approval processes and things like that. But I think they both taught me different things. College taught me a grind. It taught me how to be resourceful. It taught me a little. I enjoyed working in college first and then going into the pros because I think it set me up for success in the pros because I was so used to doing. I knew how everything worked. Right. Like I was like, OK, I did that role. So I know how it affects this. And it's a little bit easier now to digest because with a lot more of the processes and stipulations that you have in the pros, it's like you have an understanding of why that happens or how it can work. And you can rely on someone else to be like, ah, you're great at that. I'm great at this. How can we come together and make this even doper? Right. I think that was the biggest difference for me. The stops have been interesting. In Washington State, I was a digital media something. I don't even remember the title, but I was doing a lot of like just a little bit of any and everything. I was making motion graphics for social, a little bit of content capture. Back then, Snapchat was like a little bit more popping. People were making like filters on Snapchat regularly, things like that. So that was kind of my role. But I also was in an interesting position because I was bringing a 3D element to it, right? So I was making graphics. I'm like, how can we make a motion graphics package? I think that was the first. We were one of the first teams at that time in the Pac-12 that had animations for volleyball. Like if they had like, and I'm going to butcher this because I don't watch volleyball as much as I should, but like I forgot what it's called when they, a block. I'll use a block as an example. We had actual GIF animations for block that were player specific and things like that. So I was able to learn a lot of that there and kind of experiment and figure out, okay, what works best and works what space or what platform and things like that. Going to Rutgers was interesting because I got to work under Coach Stringer, who's a legend. I love Coach Stringer. If you don't know Coach Stringer, you got to look her up. And she's also a very great leader. So she pushed me. She challenged me a lot. And also with that, I was a lot more connected to it because basketball, that was my love, my heart. And to work for a women's basketball program of that caliber, it was just a great opportunity for me. But it was also a great opportunity to develop. I got to work on in arena graphics, build that graphics package, whether it was for award shows, whether it was for like a actual game and things like that. Then, of course, college, you're working with like 20 different sports, right? I had like 7 sports at Rutgers. So that was also another big difference between the college and kind of pro space, whereas you almost have like 7 different little micro teams that overarchingly connect, but they're so segmented. Versus you have all your eggs in one basket. It's like, hey, I'm going to be the best I can for Atlanta United or Atlanta Falcons or FC Cincinnati. It's just that one entity. So that's also it's a contrast there too as well. But honestly, I've learned so much at each stop about myself, what I wanted. I'd say Atlanta was the most impactful to my career. More so because that's where I figured out what I truly wanted to become and do more so. I think with Atlanta United, I had the opportunity when I was hired to choose between Falcons and United. And I'm no big football fan. And I wasn't a soccer fan either, but soccer is global. I had a little bit of experience of it at Rutgers because I worked with the women's soccer program there. And just to go in, I worked with the marketing director really, really closely, Skate Knofsinger. I'll give her a shout out. One of the most brilliant marketing minds I've ever worked with. But she was a constant challenger. When I say, like, I thought this woman was crazy when I first started working there, I was like, man, what? Like, what? It was so many processes and things. Like, I was making decks for a simple text edit. I was, you know, like, it really challenged me to become the best version of myself and develop. And I remember my creative director at the time in Atlanta, we were doing our one-on-one of review, and he's like, you know, what's next for you? What do you want? Because at that time I was a senior graphic designer. He's like, what do you want? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I always want to be creative. I never want to be a creative director. I looked around and I was like, all you guys do is like sit in meetings and complain. This is not the path for me. I was like, you know, this isn't what I'm into. But I also didn't have an understanding of what a creative director actually was. Right. So I think in Atlanta, I actually got that opportunity to become that, became the creative lead for Atlanta United. And to be able to influence that brand and see how many different touch points we had, whether it was sponsorship, marketing, ticketing, how to drive revenue, how to develop campaigns that affect the entire organization. I just learned so much just from being in that role that I was like, okay, maybe I actually do want to become a creative director because I understand what it can be. But it was amazing to have that opportunity and come here in FC Cincinnati and them have full faith to say, hey, we want you to just run the ship. You know, like, we've seen what you can do. We have the full, we have your trust, your faith. We have faith in you. Let's see what, let's make it happen. And to have that backing from leadership and from an organization that's just, they just want to go all at it. It's been amazing, amazing opportunity. And also to build a team here from scratch and all those different stops. I feel like you start to know and notice patterns of what you truly need to excel, the type of people to bring around you and things like that. And that's truly what I want to build here is an award-winning team that that's having fun, that's making great work and content. So they've all been a little bit different in ways, but all influential for sure.
One thing that you talked about, and I've said this in my head like 100 times so I wouldn't forget, is you talked about the how vital it was for you to learn what everyone did. 'Cause in this creative space, oftentimes we like to just focus on, well, it's kind of twofold. We either focus on exactly what we do and try to become the master of that, or we try to learn everything so that we could, you know, fill our resume and say, oh, I did this, this, isn't it? But the missing piece is learning what other people do so that you have that working knowledge of. Can you kind of expound upon that, like the importance of that?
Oh, it's super important. I mean, I'll give a real world example. You know, there's sponsored content all the time, right? Like, and as a digital content producer or someone that's shooting video, you just receive a request and it's like, hey, we want to do this series for X, Y, and Z. And it's put in front of you and you're like, oh, it's not something that you're just naturally interested in because it's not that hype element. It's not like a cool mashup of this. It's like it's true partner integration into a brand content piece. And I think the hardest part about that is not understanding why. You're like, yeah, I get it. It's a sponsored piece. It drives revenue, blah, blah, blah. But why? Like, they have no affiliation with our company. It doesn't make sense. I think having a basic understanding to begin with of why are we doing this piece? So that's one thing that I try to explain to my team here as well is like, if we get a piece from partnerships, they have a revenue goal to hit, right? Like at the end of the day, we all affect each other. No one department is stronger than the other, from the on-team performance, on-field performance, to partnerships, to ticketing, all that stuff. We all have to work in unison to make this thing work. So from a sponsored content perspective, it's tied to a revenue goal, which ultimately I'm like, dude, I know you like money, you know, you want to get paid, you might want a bonus and things like that. But also it helps us in a way that, and I'll kind of backtrack a little bit, but the other thing is, as a content producer, there are tons of things that you want to do. Well, guess who can pay for those things? Sponsored content. Because if you're able to actually pitch those ideas and stuff, maybe you can go pitch that to partnerships and they can sell that to a potential partner, and then you're able to expand on your idea. So it goes twofold of just understanding how the different positions work and how they affect you, because sometimes you do just get things on your desk and you're like, this doesn't make any sense, or why am I doing that when we just scored 10 goals yesterday or whatever. But just having a baseline understanding of, okay, this affects this, okay, because we do this, we can actually get this, or whatever it is, I think that's just so important to know, like, how the different areas of the business function. So for me, I didn't have a huge marketing background at all. But again, I latched on to my marketing director. I latched on to our partnerships director. I'm like, help me understand this. I'm building these presentation decks every week. Like, why? Like, this takes up so much of my time, man. Like, can you hire somebody else to do this? Like, what is going on here? But also seeing, like, wow, those presentation decks. And I think that's on the managers as well to show you your impact as an employee too. So I know I'm all over the place with this, but that presentation deck, man, that partner pitched it. They just secured a $3 million deal based off something that you spent 4 hours on. that's amazing. So to know that you had that much of an impact on the company as well is, I think, is just helpful. So it just, it all goes full circle just to get an understanding of how different things impact each other. So the desire to learn and grow and just understand, I think, is something I've always just had naturally. But I always wanted to know, why am I doing this? Like, I'm spending so much time doing this, and we work in sports. We don't have a 40-hour work week, let's be honest. So if I'm going to spend 7 hours of my day working on a PowerPoint, which I hate, by the way, PowerPoint, but if I'm going to spend 7 hours of my day, I need to know, like, what is the value in this, too, so that I can have an understanding and know that I'm putting my best foot forward and creating this for you as well. So I just think it goes full circle.
Yeah, I love that. One thing I wanted to ask is, how are you deciding to build your team? You had mentioned, you know, you had learned different things from different places that you've been. So now you're kind of fresh in this role, you know, building the team. So what does it look like to you to build your team right now?
Oh, man, to me, it's all about foundation, right? Like, FC Cincinnati is relatively new to the MLS. They spent a lot of time but they were previously in the USL, which operated honestly like a college team where you had other, like, one person doing five different roles, right? So we had some amazing people here, but now it's a matter of supplementing them with people that can support them and grow as well. So another example, like, you can have a content producer that was doing so much more than content production, right? But I want him to learn and grow, and I want him to be amazing because he's the great content producer, but he was never afforded that opportunity. Also, as we've moved into MLS, you're looking at, we have a lot more content that we have to do, whether it's partnerships, whether it's in stadium, whether it's like for digital, social, and things like that. We just have to grow our bandwidth. We have to grow our headcount. And that's something that I fought really hard with leadership, and not even truly fought, but gave them an understanding of, hey, if we want to be this in this league, if we want to appeal to this demographic, if we want to have a focus on digital content, this is what it's going to take for us to get there. These are the resources that we need to get there. So a lot of that started with just giving them a base level understanding of what a digital content team really is, because in reality, you have a lot of these senior leadership groups that truly don't understand how the digital and creative space work. They're like, oh, yeah, you just make pictures, go shoot some videos,
Send the camera. Send the camera to
yeah, just like, and in all reality, like, even I'm hiring a team photographer right now, and that's one I'll use as an example. A team photographer, I can say that to someone, and they're like, oh, all they're doing is shooting pictures on a match day. I'm like, no, but they also have to work with our digital asset management system. They have to tag photos. They have to schedule shoots. They have to get permits. They have to make sure that our equipment is good. They have to work with any freelancers that we have to make sure that we can assign there's just so much that goes into it. But just to someone that doesn't live in this world, they just don't understand. So that's been part step one, is truly figuring out, okay, as a foundation, what do we need to be successful? Because as of right now on my team, I only have two content producers, and we have two teams. We have FCC, our first team, and then FCC 2, which is our MLS Next Pro team, similar to a USL team. So we have two content producers servicing two teams. We also have Stadium. Stadium has events. We have community. We have all this. So helping them get an understanding, okay, hey, man, we need to double down on content producers. There's no way that I don't want to burn out my crew. We can't burn out my crew. And so knowing that need, it's like, hey, this is what we need to be successful. But now you have the crew that was here that's been holding it down. How can I make sure that they feel valued and they don't fall to the wayside of like, oh, everyone is just a content producer now, but giving them specific things to focus on, making sure that there's a growth path. And that's been one thing with building the team that I've been very adamant about, is what does growth look like in your role? And that's something that for me in my career, I've bounced around, yes, but it's because I always wanted to grow. Like, if I'm in a position that's not going to allow me to grow or reach a goal after a year or two, it's like I need to reevaluate, what do I truly want for myself? And is this place going to get me that? Because it's a two-way street. You're employed by someone, but you're also using them to gain expertise, gain knowledge, obviously get paid and things like that. But it should work both ways. So with the team, it's like, okay, I'm going to bring in maybe some lower level positions. We brought in a junior graphic designer. I want her to have the ability to grow into a graphic designer. Our graphic designer, senior graphic designer, design manager, things like that, setting up that path, because frankly, that's something that you rarely see within our industry. People stay in those roles for years and years, or hey, maybe you get a senior after 5 years. It's like, I don't want you to be, and I tell my team this all the time, and they probably think I'm insane. I don't want you to be here in 5 years and be in the same role. That's not success for you or me. I mean, I want you to grow. So if you don't want to grow and you want to coast, that's great, but where's the innovation in that? Whereas I don't want you to just get here and just stay stagnant, because that's also frustrating to you as an individual. You want your pay to go up. The cost of living goes up every year. You want to be on par with that as well. So what does growth look like in your role? So in building the team, to answer your question, is truly bringing in someone that has that mindset of growth, opportunity. They want to innovate. They want to learn new things. They contribute to the team. A big thing is a team player. I can't stress this enough. Feedback and criticism is something that I'm quick to give. And I think it only makes you better. I had a professor in college that stamped denied on everything that I felt was great. And it was truly a lesson in not getting attached to your work and knowing that everything that we service is for the team itself and to the overall larger brand. So just bringing in it's got to be a great culture fit too, right? That's the other part about building the team is not all about skill. It's about, can you communicate? Can you communicate with the team that you're going to be with? Can you guys work together in an environment where you guys can be creative and influence and just things like that? So I can go on and on about building the team, but it's truly an experience, and it's something that's truly important. So I take it seriously and I want to get it right. So we've been taking our time and building it, but also building that foundation so that once they come in, they can be successful.
Man, that was a lot of greatness.
Because that was the podcast. Thanks for coming.
Listen, it's a lot of things that you said that a lot of managers, I don't know if they kind of carry that in their wheelhouse when they're looking for people, or when they're building this, not even from scratch, but when they're, you know, you talked about culture building, and, you know, being a culture fit and growing the people that are in those positions that you're responsible for. So those were all great, great points. But the question I want to ask as you continue to look and build your team is, what do you look for in those people that you're trying to fill those roles? Is it, I know you talked about, you know, skill is one part, but culture fit, but like what, for this photography position, what are you looking for specifically?
I'll use photographer is a good one, because I've had that role posted for quite some time, and I've come back to it and come back to it. The one thing, obviously, skill is great. I know some amazing photographers in the world, but from a culture perspective, that team photographer is going to be integrated with the team. And when I say team, that's the people on the pitch, the players themselves. That is the coaching staff out at the training facility. And that's your team. That's truly your digital content team. So you're going to be with these people, you know, nights, weekends, day to day. It's, you know, there are days you go on a road trip, you know, you're with the team for 7 days, right? So from a culture perspective, there's this book that our co-owner, he gave me, it's called The Energy Bus, right? Like, and notably, I know he'll probably listen to this. I did not finish reading it, but I get the gist of it. I've read the cliff notes. But you got to bring some good energy to your bus, man, because otherwise you're going to end up stopping your bus constantly to try to address the issues, right? And so from a culture perspective, someone that's coming in, my team is relatively young. I think for the most part, they've been out of college maybe 1 or 2 years, the bulk of my team. And I've only been here a year. So it made a year for me, I don't know, July 18th or something like that. But most of the team was in place when I got here too, right? So bringing in someone that's going to be a good culture fit to where we are now. And again, we're building. We're in a place where, you know, we're implementing new processes. Of course, you have a new director come in. Me, I'm going to implement new processes to make sure that you guys can grow. Or if there's any we didn't have a lot of strategy going on. So implementing strategies and things like that, that's all new to someone that's never had that. So from just a positive standpoint, like, you don't want any negative energy coming onto your bus, right? And that could be seen in a lot of different ways, whereas, and, you know, you want to own projects. So like as a team photographer, you have to collaborate with other people in your department, whether it's not, it's the graphic designers, because you don't want them messing up your imagery or anything like that, being able to manage. And that's another part of it. Depending on the role you're hiring for, is that person fit to be a great manager? Is that person good to communicate with other people, deliver feedback to people in a way that's constructive, but, you know, they criticize, but they're not like, there's no any malice towards it, or they don't, you know, disrupt the energy flow within the organization. That's something that's truly important. Or just I hate to say a good person, but a good person as well, right? You want to bring someone that's a good person onto your team. And also, do their goals align? Like, it could be someone that says, like, hey, I like shooting photography right now. And they might be an amazing photographer, but ultimately, that's not truly what they want to do. They want to just get that position so they can get to something else. And it's like, all right, well, I want to make sure I set you up for success coming into this role. Let me set the expectations of what this role actually is, right? Are you a good fit for that? Knowing that you'll have to manage freelancers and kind of give presentations and things like that on, you know, what you need to expand your department. Are you comfortable with that? Can you communicate? We've never done an in-house media day before. So that person would be leading the charge on that. Are they a good fit to actually be able to coordinate that and things like that? Because I'm going to lean on them a lot. And also the growth in that role, team photographer, yes, starting off, but my goal is to build out a full photography department where you have a team photographer, a staff photographer, a manager, you know, all those things. So I want to set them up for success, knowing that they would be laying the foundation for what a true photography department would be starting off, because we've never seen it. We've never had anyone on staff to be a photographer in any capacity. So it's just a lot of different things. And my biggest one is communication, right? Like, and granted, I'm an introvert. I am very introverted. I did not talk for a long time, but communication is everything. Even to my content producers now, it's like you have an idea, you have to be able to communicate it. Because if you can't communicate it, it's in your head and you know you can do it, that's great, but you got to get that buy-in. So I'm looking for people that can communicate, and even if they can't, have a desire to want to get better in that area, right? Like, it's a difference. I'm horrible at public speaking is not my forte. I get a text message from all of my friends like, why are you leaning over in the chair? Like, why are you so nervous? Your voice shaky, blah, 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 blah. And so in my personal goals for the organization, we have like the, you know, mid-year reviews. One of mine is to get better at public speaking, to work on my posture and things like that. Okay, well, how can the organization support me in getting better in that? Because ultimately I represent them as well. So they want to help me get better in those ways. So I'm looking for someone that wants to better themselves, learn, grow. Like, no one is an expert. I learn something new every single day. Do you have a willingness to learn and accept that, like, someone might know something better than you or be better than you in a specific skill, but you guys can learn from each other and grow with each other? So a lot of that is culture fit too, because you can have someone that come into a space and feel like, you can't teach me nothing. Like, I'm the best. I do this, blah, blah, blah. I don't need that. Because we all have to learn and grow from each other, and you have to develop the people around you as well. So, and I'm big around keeping people that are way talented, more talented than me around me, because it just motivates me to learn and grow a little bit and not become complacent. So it's a hard question to answer, but you know it. I know it when I see it, if that makes sense. But it's truly just someone that's coming in and being a positive energy in so many different ways.
And the flip side of that is actually, you know, from a manager standpoint, how vital is it for you, you know, knowing that you're building and, you know, having the vision and communicating that vision of expectation?
Yeah, it's super important, right? Accountability is everything. I think accountability is everything. Right now, we don't have, like I said, we're building from scratch. I think we have across, I'm in brand marketing and communications is kind of the department I oversee with our senior director of marketing. So we kind of tag team and run the entire brand marketing and communications department. And I think we have 11 open roles right now, 11. And I just added like 3 today because I just went upstairs and knocked on the door. But when I say we're building, we are truly building from ground up. And it's just important to be able to trust the people in those roles as well. I believe we hired us. Our social team is brand new. They started in April. So bringing them up to speed, getting them acclimated with the brand and things like that, having them come in with expectations. And this was, it's interesting because when you bring in someone new, and we're mid-season, so this is crazy too. So you have to think about like timing wise with the sports. We don't have like a true off season. Everyone says like, oh yeah, yeah, do stuff during the off season. What is that? Because our season ends in October. And I want to say in November, we have pretty much a lot of our 2023 planning due. So there's truly no real off season, because in the off season, we're cranking away to build whatever's going to happen for 2023. So having people come in, and it's trusting the people in those manager roles to help develop and grow your team as well. So for me, I always defer to my team on things. Obviously, I oversee and I try to encourage them. If we have any like content meetings and stuff, I try to let them speak first. And I come in and help supplement. I'm not one of those managers that comes in and puts my foot down and says, no, it has to be this way. I want to hear you out. I want you to feel heard. I want you to collaborate. And I want to add to that. How can I enhance or help you grow or add to your idea? I think that's so important rather than coming in and stumping. I mean, obviously there are times where I have to, if we have to shut something down. But for the most part, it's even in doing that, I try to answer why. That's the other thing, the why behind why we're doing everything that we're doing. So I think it's what Simon Sinek, I can't remember his name, but definitely answering the why. So I feel like I forgot your question because I always go on and on, but it's more so it's just I trust the people in those roles to truly do their job. And if they struggle a little bit or if they're not doing it, I hold them accountable, but I also put them in a position where they can be successful. It's a difference between just like saying, oh, they're not doing a great job or they're not doing this. But, OK, what can I do to actually help them develop so that I can trust them to continue to run the department and grow in their own respective areas as well?
It seems like you're now in a role and at a point in your career where you've moved away from some of the more hands-on type work and that you're really in a leadership role. Can you talk us through whether that was, I mean, you mentioned earlier that you always felt like you wanted to have your hand in the pot a little bit. Do you still have your hand in some of the creation, or maybe that's, you know, the PowerPoints or whatever that you had mentioned earlier? And how are you then running your team as the leader and representing them in the C-suite meetings?
Oh, man, that's two. So it can go two ways. So one, I still have locker room, which I can get into in a little bit, but for locker room, I use that as a creative outlet. So if I do truly want to dabble, I can. Also, because I'm a little bit understaffed, I still get my hands dirty right now. So like I'm still building email graphics and stuff if I need to. If my team, like my two designers are taken off, both of them are taken off on a day and I don't have anyone else right now that I can say, hey, fill in for our creative team. So I'm willing to jump in and do that and help as well. So I definitely get my hands dirty a little bit, but honestly, I found more joy in helping develop and cultivate talent in others. That truly gives me more gratification at this point. I never thought I would get to that place. I didn't feel that way a year ago. I really didn't. I thought I was going to be like, and honestly, when I first moved into this role, I came in as a creative director, so I was more hands-on with the day-to-day graphics and things like that. But quickly, I just saw the impact it can have in helping others and truly helping them maximize their potential or figure out what it is they want it to become. I also see a deficit in the industry in that in general, right? Like, again, I didn't know I wanted to be a creative director. I just always thought I wanted to have a tunnel vision toward a certain thing. I had a friend that was also a senior graphic designer, and he's like, just naturally, you think creative director or art director is next, right? You think, oh man, that's the only way I can elevate in my career. And so in him interviewing for those positions, he quickly realized that's not something he was interested in. He didn't want to manage people. He didn't want to kind of speak to strategy and processes. He truly just wanted to just be a creative. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think we have this expectation that we have to go into those manager roles or we have to go there. And if that's truly not something that you want to do, then you shouldn't. It's just figuring out how can you, I mean, obviously money comes into it. People always want to make more money and things like that, titles and things. But what ways can you grow in a creative space? For me, I just told Britt this. Britt Davis runs Locker Room with me. She's like, hey, you want to work on a logo project with me for charity? And I'm like, man, do we have to? I mean, I love logos. I'm great at it. But like, I'm like, man, I don't even feel that desire to want to do that anymore. I'm more so on the consulting side or the more so like, hey, I want to give another person an opportunity to do this and I can coach them through it. I think me personally, it doesn't bring me as much joy anymore. I get the joy in helping others a little bit more these days, which, again, I just never thought I would get there. From a leadership perspective, it's very interesting because I've been blessed to have a seat at the table, right? So that is such a great, again, it speaks to being able to get even the headcount that I needed for my team, giving them an understanding of what do we do? It's not just pictures and And I had that situation happen where there, when I was a creative director, and it's like, oh, you don't have to worry about that. It's not graphics. I'm like, well, actually, that actually affects me. So let me help you understand what it truly goes into building this campaign. It's more than just a visual thing at this point. So just helping to educate. And also another thing that I've been brought into is our partner meetings, right? Like, again, speaking to that partnerships, kind of wanting to know how that world works. I sit in on some of our partner meetings with some of our biggest partners to speak to how we're elevating the brand and incorporating them into it. So I've been in a bit of a different position now where I'm not like executing, but I'm actually communicating a lot more and standing up to get the resources we need as a team. One thing I really fought hard for was freelance policies for my content creators. You see across the industry, there's a lot of different freelance policies. Some teams allow you to freelance. Some teams are like, no, you can't do anything on the side. One thing I fought the battle of is we are allowed to freelance and for people in our market. And that's not something that you usually see across this industry. So having a seat at that table, I was able to have those conversations and say, hey, this is what this can, this is how we can benefit from allowing our freelancers to actually get experience in other areas, shoot different things, learn different things, make connections in different places. But having the, if I wasn't in the room, I don't think we would have ever got that policy made. Right. So just having a seat, it makes the world of a difference to communicate that to ownership and leadership and things like that. Also, like, it just gives a little bit more respect to our team to have an understanding of what truly goes into a content production, what truly goes into if you need a graphic, how many hours it takes. My team hates me. They hated me at first, and I hated it when I was in Atlanta. We had the time track, right? But I use that time track not as a way to prove, like, this is why we need to be here, but I use it for more resources. I'm like, okay, hey, here's how this time equates to your ad spend, or here's how much, like, impressions and engagement we got on this based on how much time we put into this and things like that. Just helping them get an understanding, because if it's not, like, black and white, if people are not in our actual industry or in our world, they truly don't understand. It's just like snapping a picture and making a graphic, clicking a button. So just being able to communicate that and also sell it as well. I'm like, I'm a great saleswoman. I should have went into sales, honestly. But that's truly been impactful in my position, I would say.
Let's talk about Locker Room a little bit. Talk about that platform and kind of what you guys do with it.
Yeah, so me and Brett founded Locker Room in 2020, height of the pandemic. We were, actually before the pandemic, January of 2020, it was a creative outlet for us. In Atlanta, we weren't really truly allowed to freelance, so we wanted to find something that we can have as a creative outlet. So we started making, like, illustrations and things based on pop culture, and just naturally people became interested. They're like, hey, we want to do that for our team or our brand and things like that. And we had a lot of, like, situations where we could not do that truly working for a club. So it was like, hey, what if we did this and did it and did not pay ourselves? Which was crazy, right? You think, like, you do all these things to make money. But for us, it was truly about having fun. So we were very selective in any project we took on and anything. We made the decision up front, like, we're not going to pay ourselves from Locker Room, which was our way of being able to do all these things and have creative freedom to do things outside of work. Well, it continued to grow. We ended up getting grants from the state and things like that. And what we do is the money from Locker Room, we actually funnel it back into the community. So whether it's providing scholarships, Britt gave a scholarship to NC State. I went back to my old high school. School supply, I mean, not even school supplies, art supplies. So we provided sketchbooks and things like that for some kids that were interested in the arts. And things like that, trying to erase the stigma behind, like, oh, if you go into design or arts, you're a starving artist. I'm like, that's crazy, because I'm paying buku money for illustrations right now. Like, I don't know what you guys are talking about, but helping to erase that stigma. Or if we work with a brand or a client, we did the Seattle Storm. We did their sneakers, Encore sneakers, I think two years in a row. And those proceeds directly benefited the Black Urban League or of Seattle and things like that. So we found the ways to give back and help in other areas. And for us, it was just an outlet just to be creative. And so even most recently, we actually designed the Dream Court. So we use that money to actually give to another scholarship. And also for a day high, we're working on some projects to be able to set up things in his name. So just we found a way to give back and help others get opportunities through Locker Room. And if we're not directly doing the actual design. We're helping someone to do the design. So it's, hey, I'm a designer and I really want to get into the sports space. I don't really know, you know, what it all entails, or I've never been through a formal process. We give them those opportunities through the projects we get at Locker Room. So it's a little bit more of a consulting, big brother, big sister kind of role. But it's pretty awesome because I still get the opportunity to do things I love. I don't always have to physically do them, but I still play a part in it, which is pretty awesome. And then we're doing something that's for the greater good. So it's been amazing to be able to do that and have fun without like any type of restrictions as well. So
last thing we can kind of talk about is, where can people find your, I know you, now that you're in a managerial role, probably don't get a chance to, you know, get after it as much as you would like, but where can people find some of your work and maybe work with Locker Room, and what's that, kind of talk about all that?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm definitely, I've been trying to create reels and stuff and have a little fun. All my social channels are KPology one. So KPOLOGY and the number one. You can find me on the internet anywhere under that name. And then Locker Room is LCKRROOM. Some platforms it has a dot or underscore in between it, but you type that in, it should pop up. We're definitely super responsive. We like to have fun. We're all about pop culture on Locker Room. We're maximizing moments. We love sneakers on there, so there's a lot of sneaker customizing going on. We have a mascot named Peaches, and so he's born in the ATL, so we use him for a lot of pop culture references and things like that. But yeah, feel free to hit us up, and we always respond. I always respond too to my personal as well. So
you brought up sneakers. What is your favorite sneaker, to put you on the spot?
Oh man, my favorite sneaker. I'm biased right now. I'm going to say the PG NASA joints. They're on my Instagram page. I did a whole sneaker school presentation on them. That's my favorite sneaker, not to wear, but just to have. It's right now, I'm huge into NASA. So I've got like, my office is space themed. And so when that sneaker, I got to do some research for that sneaker and do things for that sneaker. So that's a big one. That's on my holy grail. But on my day-to-day, I wear Yeezys every day. We're Adidas team, so all of my Jordan 1s. I have a wall of shoes, literally a wall of shoes. But I'm team Adidas right now, so I'm rocking with the Yeezy, the Boost 350s.
A very comfortable shoe.
Very, very comfortable.
Oh, the one thing we didn't talk about, Justin, is one thing that we always do is kind of the one piece of advice or whatever.
Oh man, one piece of advice I would give, probably to work on your personal deficits. Like I said, for me, I was always a super introvert. I never spoke. I never used to say anything. I never spoke up in meetings. I didn't feel like it was my place. I would always say, oh, that's my manager's role to do that or address that. And I think that was another turning point in my career where I started to be more vocal and trust that I knew what I was talking about. And learn more, connect with the people that are in my network. It was amazing for me to connect the people that was above me, right? Like all the managers and things. I look at them now, they're overseeing like corporations and craziness, but because I took the time to get to know them and communicate and wasn't never afraid to truly voice my opinions and things like that, I feel like I was able to form true, genuine connections. And now that's followed me throughout my career because I see them at every stop. And they've been influential at every stop for me. So definitely to work on your personal deficits and connect with the people that are around you, because you just never know.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.